Welcome to Christ Church Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com. My home is not on this
earth, not in this world. Cool, so last week there was a story in the news that was making big headlines. You probably saw it. It was about a former Dallas police officer called Amber Geiger who had tragically shot dead and murdered her neighbour, Botham Jean. And there was this video that was making the rounds on Facebook. I think there's a photo. Yeah, there's a photo. But that wasn't particularly the big news. The news that made the headlines around the world came after Botham Jean's brother, Brant Jean, made a statement in court where he made an extraordinary act of compassion towards his brother's killer. He said to this woman who had killed his brother, "If you are truly sorry, I know I can speak for myself, I forgive you. And I know if you go to God and ask him, he will forgive you too. I love you just like anyone else, and I'm not going to hope you rot and die just like my brother did. I personally want the best for you. I wasn't going to say this in front of my family. I don't even want you to go to jail. I want the best for you because I know that's exactly what Botham would have wanted for you. Give your life to Christ. I think giving your life to Christ is the best thing Botham would want for you." He then says again, "I love you as a person. I don't wish anything bad on you." He then asks the judge if he can go and hug Amber, his brother's killer, to which the judge agrees, and we get that amazing photo behind us. What an extraordinary act of selfless love Brant Jean had. He had the right to be angry and bitter towards his brother's killer. From most people's point of view, he had the right to hate her. But that's not what he does. Instead, he shows utterly unselfish love towards the person who shot and killed his brother. There was no malice or ill intent. Brant wanted to show forgiveness and love, and as a result, showed that there is a God who loves and would forgive her too. And we as Christians are called to be people of utterly unselfish love, to be people who go against the grain of society and to love unconditionally. And this is something Paul was trying to get across to the church in Corinth. He was trying to get across that as followers of Jesus, we need to be people of love, that build each other's faith, who give hope to the people around us and ultimately show love no matter what the situation. And today we're looking specifically at 1 Corinthians chapter 13 to 14. And the church in Corinth, it was in an interesting place. The whole book is a letter from Paul to the church in Corinth. And Paul knew the guys in Corinth pretty well. He probably spent like a year and a half with them. And off the back of him being there, a church was formed. Now, Corinth at the time was a major port city, a big economic centre with temples to different Greek and Roman gods. But as the church there grew, they were wrestling with what the church looked like in the culture that they were surrounded in. And as a result, there were loads of different issues that sprung up that Paul wanted to address. And so 1 Corinthians is all about Paul addressing those issues, from issues to do with eating food that's been sacrificed to other gods, to sex, and even disagreements around the subject of resurrection. Paul writes a letter to sort out the disagreements that were happening within the church. And ultimately, he writes the letter to point people back to the gospel. And one of the issues they were having was to do with their weekly gatherings. You see, the gatherings were becoming a place where people were having powerful spiritual experiences. Some were praying out loud in other languages, while others would be sharing teaching and then be interrupted by someone else who wanted to share. And while speaking in tongues in other languages is great, the meetings were becoming chaotic. And ultimately, they were distracting people from hearing the gospel. And so Paul, in chapters 11 to 14, addresses this issue and says, look, through everything, through all your different giftings, you need to use them out of a place of love. And to illustrate this, in chapter 12, Paul talks about how we as church are a body. We have many different parts, many different giftings, but together we work as one body. There are gifts like the gift of the apostle, which just means messenger. There is the gift of the prophet, of a teacher, of healing, of speaking in tongues, of helping others, and of leadership. These are all great things to desire and want as a follower of Jesus. There's nothing wrong with that. But at the end of chapter 12, after Paul has listed all these giftings and the different parts of the church have, he says this: "But now let me show you a way of life that is best of all." And then we're introduced to chapter 13. Probably one of the most famous passages there is. It's that classic wedding passage we hear all the time. And we're so used to this passage, but often on a wedding day, we don't hear the context behind it. Actually, when Paul writes about love, it's all in the context of our gifting, our gifts. It's to do with the church as a body. And actually, that's our gifting, no matter what it is pointless if we're not people who are doing it out of a place of love. So Paul says, "But now let me show you a way of life that is best of all." Let's take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 13. It says this: "If I could speak all the languages of earth and of angels, but didn't love others, I would only be a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I had the gift of prophecy, and if I understood all of God's secret plans and possessed all knowledge, and if I had such faith that I could move mountains, but didn't love others, I would be nothing. If I gave everything I have to the poor and even sacrificed my body, I could boast about it, but if I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It is not irritable and keeps no record of being wronged. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up. Love never loses faith. It is always hopeful and endures through every circumstance. Prophecy and speaking in unknown languages and special knowledge will become useless, but love will last forever. Now, our knowledge is partial and incomplete, and even the gift of prophecy reveals only part of the whole picture. But when the time of perfection comes, these partial things will become useless. When I was a child, I spoke and thought and reasoned as a child, but when I grew up, I put away childish things. Now we see things imperfectly, like puzzling reflections in a mirror, but then we will see everything with perfect clarity. All that I now know is partial and incomplete, but then I will know everything completely, just as God now knows me completely. Three things will last forever: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. I don't know if you've ever been surprised by people's love towards you. What I think is amazing about being part of a church body is that it doesn't matter who you are or where you come from. You can meet other Christians you've never met before who don't know who you are but still show you amazing love. It can be people on the other side of the world and you've never met them and probably will never meet again, but there's something about them that they can't help but show you love. And most of the time, that love comes in the form of food, which I think is the best sort of love, in my opinion. And as followers of Jesus, no matter who we are, where we come from, or what our skills and abilities are, love is essential, and love should be our highest goal. And the point that Paul is making, like I've already said, is that, look, these other gifts, like speaking in tongues, like prophecy, are great. We should be people who eagerly desire after them. But our highest goal as followers of Jesus should be to love others. As we know, when Jesus is asked what the greatest commandment is in Matthew 22, he says to love God with everything and to love your neighbour as yourself. Or in other words, to love God and show that same love to the people around us. And so we already know that we should be people of love, but what does that mean? And in relation to our gifts we've been given, what do they mean in the context of love? And one of the points that Paul is trying to make in chapters 13 and 14 is that our gifts should be used to help build up and strengthen the church. Our gifts should be used to build faith, not just to build up ourselves. The first three verses of chapter 13, I think, emphasize this, that we are gifted to love, and when we love, it builds faith. Paul puts it like this in Ephesians 4, 11 to 12. "Now these are the gifts Christ gave to the church: the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, and the pastors and teachers. Their responsibility is to equip God's people to do his work and to build up the church, the body of Christ." The gifts we're given are to build up the church through love. Now, one of my passions in life is drumming. I've been drumming for about 15 years now. I think there's a picture of me when I was a little. There we go. There's little Joseph drumming. So I got a drum kit when I was about 3 and then picked it up later on in life. But there I am, my Christmas little shirt and tie, loving life. So I've been drumming for a little bit. And around the age of 13 or 14, I was a bit naive. I kind of thought that I was like the best drummer to have ever lived, which I was discovering later life that I definitely, definitely wasn't. So I thought Travis Barker, who's the drummer in Blink 182, I thought he was rubbish. If you ever heard him play, he is not rubbish. I thought anything I ever saw a drummer do on stage, I could do equally well. I thought that I was God's gift to drumming. I thought I was the next Chad Smith, Buddy Rich and Keith Moon, all rolled into one. If you don't know any of those names, don't worry, that probably means you actually have a life unlike like me and Andy Wells. But it got so bad that if there were any other drummers on stage, I would see them as my enemy. I needed to defeat them in order to prove that I was the superior drummer. I would put people down who I thought I was better than in order to show them that I was the best. You see, I had this gift of being able to play the drums, but I wasn't using it in the right way. I'd made my gifting all about myself. I'd made it about making myself feel good, and ultimately, I made it about making myself look good to other people. And a similar thing was happening in the church in Corinth. They were having these powerful spiritual experiences. Like I've already mentioned, they were prophesying and speaking in tongues. Prophesying is just when God reveals something to us about the future. And speaking in tongues is when God gives us an unknown language to speak to him with him. It's like a love language to God. But the problem with the church in Corinth is that they were using tongues as a sign of spiritual superiority rather than to bring spiritual unity. They had forgotten that love should be the motive behind them using their gifts. Paul uses really harsh language to get this across in 1 Corinthians 13, verses 1 to 3. He's basically saying, look, without love for others, speaking in tongues is just, it's just noise. It doesn't mean anything. Without love as our motivation behind it, all we're doing is just speaking noise into the air. Speaking in tongues is actually about deeply and spiritually connecting with God. If we're just using it to make ourselves look good, then we're just making noise. It's the same with prophecy, having unlimited knowledge, giving to the poor, sacrificing ourselves. All these things that Paul mentions in the first few verses of chapter 13. If we're not doing them out of a place of love, then actually we're doing them out of a place of love for ourselves. Great faith, acts of service, and miracle working power produce very little without love. You see, for the Corinthians, spiritual gifts such as speaking in tongues have become about making themselves look better, look holier than everyone else, when in reality it should have been used to build up the church, to build faith. And the point that Paul makes in his letter is that spiritual gifts are only truly beneficial in the context of the gathering of a church meeting when they're used to help everyone in the church. I remember I was at Soul Survivor one year and they were doing a call for people who wanted to speak in tongues. And there was an older guy in our group and he said to me and my mate, he was like, you should go up for that. And I'm not going to lie, I wasn't too fussed by it. But he was kind of like, you should go up. So I went up anyway, and he came with us. And we got to like the front, and like everyone was speaking in tongues around us. And I was like, crap, the pressure is on. I have to speak in tongues now, because this guy who's come with me and my mate, he's expecting it to happen. So he laid hands on me, and like I was like, please, Jesus, like give it to me, just for this guy so he'll leave me alone. And so I was there at the front, hoping that I would erupt in tongues at any minute, but nothing happened. And it was starting to get a little bit awkward. So I thought, right, I need to do something now, just so this guy is satisfied with the result. So I just started chatting in gibberish, hoping it would make the whole situation go away. And I'm not going to lie, it worked. But
I kind of missed the point, didn't I, of what tongues was all about. I didn't quite get what the point of it was. I made it all about pleasing this other person, of looking good. And in verse 12 of chapter 14, Paul says this: since you are so eager to have the special abilities the Spirit gives, seek those that will strengthen the whole church. Our gifts are to build and strengthen the church. Speaking in tongues is great. After all, it's a language we get to talk to God with, a secret language, a love language to him. But for the most part, it just strengthens us personally. In some situations, it can strengthen the entire church too. When there's an interpretation, you may have been in a church meeting before when someone speaks in an unknown language and then someone else may get up and give a meaning behind that. And that's great. But in the context of a gathering of other believers, what Paul is saying is that we should desire the gifts that strengthen and build up the entire church. Paul, he also uses the example of prophecy. He says this in verses 3 and 4 of chapter 14. He says, "But the one who prophesies strengthens others, encourages them and comforts them. A person who speaks in tongues is strengthened personally, but one who speaks a word of prophecy strengthens the entire church." Our gifts are not just to build up ourselves. Our gifts are to strengthen and build up the faith of others. And through all this, love must be the chief motivation. It must be the reason of us using our gifts. Love should be our highest goal. We are gifted to love, and when we love, not out of selfish ambition, but out of a desire to show others the same love we've experienced, then we build faith. Because we're giving people a glimpse of the amazing love we've experienced through Jesus. As we love people with our gifts, it builds faith. Loving others also gives hope. We live in a world, right, where there are so many people who don't know that there is hope. We only have to turn on the news to see why. We're constantly fed with negative news. We only need to see what happened in the Arndale Centre on Friday. The world around us can look hopeless. And ultimately, people don't know there is hope because they don't know there is a way out. But we, as Christians, we have experienced hope. Not a hope that is wishful thinking, like a hope it doesn't rain in Manchester this week, or a hope Steph or Harry win the Great British Bake Off. No, our hope is an assured thing. It's based on a person that will never fail us, that will never let us down. That hope has a name, and his name is Jesus. And 1 Corinthians 13, 4-7, it lists some amazing characteristics of what love is, but also what love isn't. And when we show love like this to the world around us, we give people hope because we're going against what everyone else does. Let's read it quickly. It says this, verse 4, "Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It is not irritable and it keeps no records of being wronged. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith. It is always hopeful and endures through every circumstance." One of the issues our society has is that it confuses love and lust. Lust is a passionate desire for something. Another word for it may be greed. We live in a greedy society where it's all about what can I get? And the world around us turns love into this thing where it's not about how can we serve people, but how can I serve myself? But unlike lust, God's kind of love is directed outward towards others, not inward towards ourselves. God's kind of love is utterly unselfish, and as a result, is completely countercultural to the world around us. When I was a kid, maybe around the age of 9, I got given a Valentine's Day card from a girl called Lindsay Knowles. Yes, she was a year below me at school. Now, I wasn't very good with girls at this age. In fact, I never really was very good with girls. I'm very thankful my wife Ruth stuck it out with me. And if you're single and want a bit of advice about dating, don't do anything I'm about to tell you. So Lindsay Knowles walks up to me and she gives me this Valentine's Day card. And I'm not going to lie, I freak out. I was not interested in Lindsay in that way. But instead of doing the right thing, of taking the card, opening it, saying thank you, I kicked off. I started crying. I refused to open the card because I was afraid of what it might say, which, of course, upset Lindsay. And people kept coming up to me and saying, like, Joseph, like, you need to open this card. And I was like, no. I kept on refusing until my mum came up to me, who worked at the school that I was at, and she came up to me and was like, Joseph, you really need to open this card. So eventually I gave in and I opened it. And I read this Valentine's Day card, and as I read it, I felt awful. Because all it said, literally, this is all it said. It said, to Joseph, thanks for being a good friend, Lindsay. I felt bad. I had kicked up a fuss over pretty much nothing. And what's worse, this girl was pretty upset, surprisingly enough. But that's what the world teaches, right? That if something isn't what we wanted, or if we're not happy with a situation, to kick up a fuss, to get upset, to go guns blazing until we get what we want. Our society is impatient. It's not always kind. We can be jealous, boastful. We can be full of pride. We keep records of when we've been wronged, and we give up when things are tough. But God's love is completely different. It completely goes against the grain of society. Instead of being selfish, it is utterly unselfish. And this translates with our gifting and our abilities. The world uses their gifts for selfish gain, whether that's to make money, to boost our ego, or simply feel good about ourselves. But God calls us to use our gifts to serve other people. In chapter 14, verse 18 to 19, Paul says this, I thank God that I speak in tongues more than any of you. All right, Paul, showing off a bit there. But in a church meeting, I would rather speak 5 understandable words to help others than 10,000 words in an unknown language. Our gifts are to serve others, not to serve ourselves. And if our gifts are getting in the way of people meeting with Jesus, then I think we need to stop. You see, the way God calls us to use our gifts that he's given us is to use them completely unselfishly, even if it costs us. That means serving people when we're tired, grumpy, fed up. That means choosing to serve people even when they've wronged us or upset us. It means serving people even when we can't be bothered. And God's not telling us to burn out by serving or anything like that. Actually, rest is really important. But what's crazy is that when we serve and when we use our gifts in a completely unselfish way, we get to point people to Jesus. One of the greatest things I think we can do with this life is to recognize that our gifts and our abilities come from God. And as a result, we want to use those gifts to glorify him. And when we do that, when we show people that there is hope, that there is something more than this world we see around us, that there is a God who loves unconditionally and without limits. So let me ask you a question. Are you somebody who is patient? Are you somebody who is kind? Are you someone who doesn't get jealous, boastful, or proud? Are you someone who doesn't get irritated or keep records of wrongs? Are you someone who rejoices whenever truth wins out? Are you someone who never gives up, never loses faith, who is full of hope and keeps going through every circumstance? I think these are all things we should strive to be like. Are you someone willing to use your gifts to serve God no matter what the personal cost? And as a result, show the world that there is hope and his name is Jesus. We are gifted to love. And when we show true, unselfish love, we show people hope. Finally, love passes the test of time. 1 Corinthians 13, 8 to 13 talks about this. It says this, prophecy and speaking in unknown languages and special knowledge will become useless, but love will last forever. Now, our knowledge is partial and incomplete, and even the gift of prophecy reveals only part of the whole picture. But when the time of perfection comes, these partial things will become useless. When I was a child, I spoke and thought and reasoned as a child, but when I grew up, I put away childish things. Now, we see things imperfectly, like puzzling reflections in a mirror. But then we will see everything with perfect clarity. All that I know now is partial and incomplete, but then I will know everything completely, just as God now knows me completely. 3 things will last forever: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. I've got to the point now where I've basically accepted that I am already a middle-aged man. One of the reasons is that I'm already losing my hair. But the other reason is that
I'm currently looking at buying a new front door to my house. Ooh, as our old one is pretty drafty and pretty old. And so I've been doing my research on the different types of doors. You've got your aluminium doors, you've got your composite doors, or you can get a PVC door. Yes, my life is extremely exciting. In fact, one evening last week, I spent a full hour and 40 minutes listening to a door salesman tell me about what door I should buy, and I still haven't got a clue. And it was as boring as it sounds. Doors, funny enough, are not exciting. But ultimately, the reason I wanted a new door is that I wanted to make my house better. In fact, there are loads of improvements I want to make to my house. I want to get new flooring. I've got some damp that needs sorting out. This is what happens when you get a job. Your life just goes downhill and gets boring. I want to build more things into my house to make it more valuable. But the thing is, in 10 or 15 years, most of these things will probably need replacing again. Believe it or not, doors don't last forever. They don't have long-lasting value. I'm going to stop talking about doors, I promise you. And so much of what we build our lives upon don't actually have a long-lasting effect. They don't pass the test of time. We build our life on success, on money, on building a family, but in the end, none of these things will last. In this part of the passage, what Paul is saying is that when it comes to Jesus coming back, love is the only thing that will last forever. Everything else will fade. What we've built our life upon, if not love, will fade. The only thing that we can do in this life that will last for eternity is love. Jesus says this in Matthew 6, 19 to 21. It says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be." And the thing is, it's not just physical things we build in this life. Even our different gifts and abilities, they'll become useless. Because when we're with Jesus in heaven, we won't need them. The gifts we have, and in particular the spiritual gifts God gives us, are for us in this lifetime to reveal a glimpse of God's glory now. Our gifts are for us to reveal Christ to the world around us, but we will only see the full picture of God's glory when Jesus comes back, or when we die and get to spend eternity with God in heaven. And when this happens, only then will we get to see the full picture of God's glory, meaning the old gifts we've desired for are no longer needed. The only thing that will have lasted is love. God is the very definition of love. What are you building your life on? Are you building it on success, money, happiness, or are you building it on a place of unselfish love? One thing that gets me excited is that when we choose to love others above everything else, it has a knock-on effect. That as we've experienced God's life-transforming love, we get to show that same love to other people. And as they're transformed by God's love too, that they will go on and show love to the people they're surrounded by. And it will go on and on and on. God's love has no limits. It has no barriers. What's crazy is that actually, God chooses to partner with us on this amazing rescue mission to get his kids back home. It all comes back down to those two greatest commandments, to love God with everything and show that same love to the people around us. So let me ask you a question. We are gifted to love, but if you're not using your gifts for Jesus, who are you using them for? We are gifted to love, but if you're not using your gifts to serve others, then who are you really serving? If you're not using your gifts to build faith and strengthen the church, whose kingdom are you really building? And if you're not loving others like God loves us and gave up his all to show us that love, who are you really loving? The church is not just for fuzzy feelings. It's not just for a good worship time or even just to make friends. The church's purpose is all about others. It's about loving others so that they may experience God's love and be changed and transformed by him. We need to stop looking inward and look outward to the people who don't know him. In your uni, in your workplace, on your street, let's not just love within the church. As great as that is, we need to start loving on those on the outside too. Finally, the passage finishes like this. Three things will last forever: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. Faith is the foundation and content of God's message. As we as Christians are called to build faith, we are gifted to love, and out of that love builds people's trust in God. Hope is the attitude and focus. As Christians, we are called to be people who bring hope wherever we go. We are gifted to love, not just out of love we show... I've said that wrong. We are gifted to love, and out of that love, show people that there is hope. Not just wishful thinking, but hope that is secure in Jesus. And love, love is the action. When faith and hope are in line, you are free to love completely because you understand how God loves you. Finally, I love how the Message version puts this final verse. It says this: trust steadily in God, hope unswervingly, love extravagantly. And the best of the three is love. I'm going to pray. Thank you, Jesus, that we love because you first loved us, God. Thank you for that amazing gift of love. We don't deserve it. We don't deserve that love you showed us through Jesus, God. And I pray that we would be people who show love no matter the situation, no matter the circumstance, no matter who the person in front of us is, God. I pray we would be people who bring hope, and we build faith, and we show love to this world around us. Amen.